May it please the court, the only difference between this case and the ones that have preceded it is it involves a different statute, which is unlawful possession of a firearm. The defendant at the time of his underlying conviction would not have been barred from possessing a firearm because the statute under which he was convicted was not considered a dangerous felony, which at that time was the only restriction. In 2008, it was amended to encompass all felons, and the charge was challenged on the basis that it was retrospective. The court agreed and dismissed the case on that ground. If there are any questions I have not answered, I'll certainly be glad to entertain them. If not, I'll just turn over to Ms. Johnston. And
Can you address it? You know, this is the first case that's been argued not in the context of sex offenders. Can you address the arguments about, to the extent you're talking about safety and the need to protect children and so forth? They're very different arguments in this case.
It's a different goal, but certainly there's been a consensus for some time, because felon in possession laws have existed for some time, that there are reasons why we don't want felons to possess firearms, and that's been a restriction that's been placed on them. It seemed, I guess, as a public safety measure. I haven't looked at it in terms more specifically than that, because frankly, from my point of view, since I'm dealing with the retrospective nature of it, it seems like it's retrospective or it's not. And while I think the safety purposes behind it have some other can go to some other issues as to why a law is valid or not, I don't know that it necessarily changes the retrospective nature of it, nor does it change the question of whether, you know, retrospective even applies to this as a criminal statute. If that answered your question.
And one, sure. This is a technical, very technical thing. Mm-hmm. The light seems to be slightly facing us, the one in front of you, so that it's in our eyes.
Yes. Oh,
thank
that
you.
One.
But
oh.
Thank you. So, oh. Not, well, you don't want it in your eyes either, but thank you very much.
No, that's fine. Thank you.
Hard to look directly at counsel.
Thank you for efficient use of your time.
May it please the court. Certainly. With respect to counsel in addressing Judge Sith's question, I think also in this case, the state has not preserved any challenge to the merits of the ruling of the court below. So the state, in its point relied on, merely made the claim that it's made in the other cases, that retrospective is a term that applies to civil only. And so even if this court wishes to engage in a policy discussion about why would firearms need to be regulated with respect to convicted felons, I don't think it's going to be an appropriate basis in ruling on the case today. This court has acknowledged in other cases that the retrospective provision in the Missouri Constitution is very unique, and as we've heard discussed today, only exists in several other states. Giving effect to the state's argument here that ex post facto is the only part of our Constitution that can apply to criminal laws really takes away any meaning from that provision, retrospective, in terms, well, we've talked about the fact that it can apply to other things, but it really takes away the application of that and takes away meaning to the term retrospective that I think clearly was contemplated by those who participated in the Constitutional Convention.
What is your authority that some meaning, apart from that it was to apply to civil laws, can be inferred from any of those?
Well, I think that we don't have any authority. So first of all, one thing I did want to address is that, you know, the state is asking the court here to specifically, because you all have had this discussion before, you had this discussion in Davis, but couldn't rule on the merits in that case, and the state is coming back again now with five cases to say that if this court is going to follow this logic, then you have to specifically overrule Bethurum. And I think that's incorrect, because as has already been discussed, the issue in Bethurum was not the issue that is faced here. It was not a direct question of, does the retrospective provision in our Constitution apply to criminal laws?
So you don't think the scope of the retrospective clause was at issue in Bethurum.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I think in the court even states at the end of its opinion, I think highlighting the fact that its prior discussion had been interesting but not relevant to the issue that needed to be decided by the court. And the Bethurum court said, we can talk about all these things and whether it's retrospective and whether it's ex post facto, but it is a less difficult task to determine whether it's a retrospective law or not than to lay down a rule aptly and exactly to govern all cases. And we shall make no such attempt. The case we are considering does not require it, even if we had the capacity for the performance. I think there the court is pointing out that while they may have discussed it, it was not the exact question that was before the court. And in fact, they ruled that the provision was neither ex post facto nor retrospective.
Well, and I'm not sure I don't understand that clause differently than you do. They're saying we're only required to rule on the scope, rule on retrospectivity, if I can say the word, under the facts of this case. We're not attempting to set out a rule that covers all cases. That's very different, isn't it, than saying it's totally dictum?
Even if that were the case, then I think we'll go back to what Judge Stiff has pointed out, which is that court made that blanket statement, that blind statement of ex post facto is to criminal as retrospective is to civil without any supporting authority. And so it was just that court making a proclamation on that issue without any support. And I think that this court's later opinions, for example, in Phillips and R.L., really went into greater depth in analyzing what was the meaning of that provision.
Was the issue of its limitation to civil versus criminal raised at all in those two recent cases? I don't remember that anyone had argued, and so that when the court was proceeding, it was on the assumption that it governed criminal as well as civil, but that was not raised at that time.
In RL, an ex post facto claim was raised in addition to a retrospective claim. Mm-hmm. And this court noted in a footnote that the ex post facto claim did not even need to be addressed because the issue could be resolved just looking at the retrospective provision. So I do believe that both things were available to this court to look at and analyze.
Well, they might have been available, but were they briefed and argued?
I can give you the answer. They were not briefed and argued. The briefs are public. So
thank you, because I guess my question.
Question is, you're criticizing Bethurum because it's making statements without citing authority or you know, having a basis for the statement, and that same criticism could be made of those cases because it was just going forward making the assumption that it applied without any analysis because no one challenged that.
Okay, and if that's the case, then I guess it's before this court to rehash it all out again.
And does retrospective mean everything? Is it literally understood, or do you think it has some narrowed meaning because otherwise the argument is you would prohibit any law that uses any prior fact, if it's interpreted in its broadest sense, and it would totally overlap ex post facto. So, do you have to narrow it to some extent? And if so, how do you determine the limits?
I don't know the answer to that. I think that when the court has looked at the debates and we look at what was discussed there, to the extent that the court is going to look at that. The representative who brought forward the idea that retrospective is an umbrella that really covers ex post facto, and that person proposed just using the term retrospective. No one stood up and said, well, you can't do that because if you take out ex post facto, mm-hmm. then criminal stuff isn't covered. So I think what happened, if you look at the discussion, right after Mr. Gant discussed, well, he says, what is an ex post, is not an ex post facto law retrospective law? Most assuredly it is. What is an ex post facto law? It is a retrospective criminal law. That is to say, it is one of the class of retrospective laws which is conversant with criminal matters. And one of the other delegates said, you know, ex post facto has been in our Constitution since 1820, and we ought to just leave it in. And I think if you look at the time period where this is all happening, this is about 10 years after the end of the Civil War, where there was an actual real threat to our country being all united under one federal constitution. And one of the delegates pointed out that they believed we should just make our Missouri Constitution, this is Representative Taylor, we should have the Missouri Constitution written without any reference to the United States Constitution. Because they couldn't bank on what the federal constitution was going to look like. But here in Missouri, we could decide what we wanted ours to look like. And I think more out of deference to the prior constitution that had been passed, and perhaps just fear of wanting to change anything, those things stayed in. Not because anyone disagreed with the idea that retrospective was an all-encompassing umbrella that also covered criminal matters, but because adding it in didn't disrupt what was already there, but did broaden it. And that is our prerogative as an independent state, to give that broader interpretation if that is what we want. And I believe that since no one jumped up and said, whoa, you guys are taking this way too far with the retrospective, we don't want anything covered by covering criminal laws except ex post facto. Nobody said that. I think that's an important consideration.
If there is a distinction and retrospective only applies to civil, not criminal, is 571070 a criminal or civil statute?
Well, I would have to argue then that it's somehow a civil statute. I mean, I don't have to go there. I think it is a criminal law. But the state has not challenged that the court made the wrong merits determination in dismissing that as unconstitutionally applied to Mr. Honeycutt. What the state raised in its point relied on was was that the retrospective laws ban is exclusively for civil rights and remedies and does not apply to crimes and punishment. You know, it's the point relied on is raised in a really sort of generic way to address this issue as it, you know, now encompasses five cases here.
But I think inherent in that, they're arguing that your case is a criminal statute, so it would not apply. There would be no ban on the statute.
That is correct. Do you agree with that? That is correct.
And is there an argument that you can or want to make that the statute is not criminal, that it is in some respects civil?
No. Thank you.
Your constitutional argument is very interesting in that we had the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments around 1868, and I don't know whether they really had any constitutional amendment about ex post facto. We had the right to vote for women, we had income tax, we had first prohibition, then not prohibition, we had succession, but was there ever a constitutional amendment about ex post facto been considered by the United States Constitution?
I don't know. I can't answer the question. I don't know. But I think, you know, I think an important thing when you're looking at that whole picture of the constitutional amendments, and especially the discussions in the prior cases about what is the technical term, and should we look at the technical definition, or do we look at a plain language definition? These are delegates who are putting forth a constitution amendment to be proposed, but it's the voters who are ultimately reading that provision and deciding whether or not to vote it into law. And look at 1865 Missouri. I would say that you're looking at a lot of farmers and people who are probably more likely to be reading a common sense sort of meaning of those words rather than being held to understanding some technical term. And I think it's been pointed out, there's a mechanism for making that a change to our Constitution. If this is ultimately, if this court ultimately holds that the retrospective provision does apply to criminal statutes as well, and Missouri citizens don't like that, I think that they can probably gather up some steam, as we've seen them do in other contexts, and make a change. But I don't know that that's necessarily the case.
If you're right that we need to look at the commonly understood meaning of retrospective, because this is a constitutional amendment the voters voted on, not a statute, would that also apply to ex post facto? Or did that have such an acquired meaning that?
I don't know that that a farmer in 1865. I don't know that I can really, you know, define a Latin term as bizarre as ex post facto. If you're looking at, you know, I think
they weren't teaching Latin in the country.
Oh, actually, they probably were. I don't know. I think that obviously, you know, the cases have indicated that ex post facto is a pretty ancient term that had a commonly understood technical meaning. Whether that means that we should look for a technical meaning of the word retrospective, I'm not sure. Part of the debates for the Constitutional Convention included one delegate who wanted to define the term retrospective, and that was not supported by everyone. So we don't have a definition of what it is, so what do we do? There was an opportunity to present a technical meaning for that term and include it right into the Constitution, but that wasn't done. So I would advocate the plain and ordinary.
And that's the
meaning.
Definition that the cases later adopted, and that there's about.
Yes, and Tierney.
And in fact, Tierney. Earlier cases had used that meaning of it, but they'd not addressed whether it was civil or criminal.
No mention at all of restricting it to a civil. So if there are no other questions, I'm asking that this court affirm the trial court's dismissal of count 3 in Mr. Honeycutt's case as being an unconstitutional application of that law to him. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the
court.
Should
we read anything into the language that ex post facto might be considered foreign language, whereas retrospective is English, that somehow the legislature doesn't think we should be dealing with foreign language or foreign laws?
Well, my sense from history is that Latin, Greek, and other foreign language were probably in far greater currency back in the 19th century in America than they are at the present time. So, you know, people used to read the classics as a matter of course. Even people without formal schooling were well-versed in those sorts of things.
With new legislation and new understandings of, should we be ignoring the foreign language, given that's what the legislature would like us to do, unless it gets the governor vetoes it?
I don't believe so, because if we're talking about this particular provision, it's a provision that goes all the way back to 1820 and is carried forward in constitution after constitution after constitution. So it's certainly the original meaning of that is I think very relevant to what that is. Now to respond to some of the concerns that the delegates raised in the debates, there was concern expressed on the part of some that what if ex post facto and imperative contracts are taken out of the U.S. Constitution, we want to make sure they're still in there. But there was also the opinion expressed that those delegates who put into the 1820 Constitution the specific bans on ex post facto and imperative contracts knew what they were doing, did it for a reason, and did it because those terms had specific meaning, and we should honor that intent by those folks. But so it kind of cuts both ways.
But the argument we just had brought to mind, there were cases both prior to and after the Constitution in Bethlehem which defined retrospective,
right.
And they defined it the way then Squaw Creek did, although it didn't refer back to them, as impairing a vested right, imposing a new obligation,
right.
and a third aspect to it, which is
sure.
I can't catch right now. But and yet it never talked about civil or criminal, so the technical meaning that it may have had would have been that definition, but that didn't say in civil cases any place.
And it may not have been an issue in those cases.
Well,
one thing,
there aren't any cases that struck down criminal cases. That
that's right.
That
and Bethlehem dealt with a habeas corpus, which isn't technically criminal, but it was challenged on both ex post facto and retrospective grounds, which occasioned the court to address that issue. And by the way, even though it's been categorized as dicta a couple of times here, that discussion of it being limited civil rights remedies, I think it's repeated no less than three times throughout the opinion. So the court was very clear on that point.
Criminal rights would apply in habeas, we treat that as civil or criminal for purposes.
It's treated as a civil cause of action. I think I was looking back to see if that changed, and I know going back at least to 1908 it was considered that way. I can't say for absolute certainty that it might not have been treated as some sort of sui generis thing at some point in time, but again, as we talked about before, the court deciding the issues that are put before it to decide. The court was asked to decide, is this an ex post facto or a retrospective violation? Necessarily had to address that. If in the earlier cases, as I suspect, they all involved civil matters and would be challenged as retrospective, there's no need to even get into the question of whether or not it applies to civil matters. I think
well,
that's always
what I was
been.
Trying to get into. You're saying it had an acquired technical meaning, but the only one the case law seems to have is that definition of what retrospective means, applying to vested rights, imposing new obligations, and that definition doesn't talk about civil or criminal. It's just a definition generally of what the word retrospective means.
But again, just like if you challenge a criminal law on the basis of ex post facto, you don't necessarily have to explicitly state that ex post facto only applies to criminal. That's given from the nature of the case. What I'm saying is if it's only been brought up in civil cases, why would that discussion be necessary? The court would not need to go there and would not need to make that distinction because it would fit within the context of that
case.
But,
go ahead. I'm trying to figure out the derivation of the mean understanding of it to apply only to civil, haven't found any place it comes from, any definition that so limits it.
I don't know if I can tell you what the derivation of the definition that you've just cited is either, but
right.
These things go back in time. But commonly understood usages at the time that they were adopted. Now, unfortunately, they don't come down in full form in stone
tablets. We've reached the limit of both our information about this.
We're past mine, I can tell you.
All right.
The only other.
Finish
up.
Thank you. Right. Case will be submitted.